Visa wants to know, where would you like to be? Whether you're a super fan or just in it to win your league, Visa knows we want to spend less time standing in line and more time pursuing our passions. That's why for over 60 years, Visa's been adding innovative plays to the way we pay. From tapping to pay to getting paid in 30 minutes or less, they're giving businesses and consumers more tools to do just that. They know that every Visa transaction is a promise, whether it's a street vendor in front of the stadium or picking up the latest NFL gear online. Visa wants to provide us with the most secure and easy payment experience possible so everyone, everywhere can get to where they'd like to be. Visa, everywhere you want to be.
Hi, everyone. Good morning and welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That's Nick Wright. Bart Scott joining us this morning. Hope you all had a wonderful Thanksgiving. You too as well. You look about a pound and a half fuller than you did yesterday.
Oh, I think she just called us fat.
I didn't. I said
my dad,
full.
My dad
Happy
did.
Thanksgiving, everybody.
Yeah, my dad did because exactly what I said was going to happen happened.
Oh, and by the way, can I just tell you? I have a new obsession. Move over, Kyle Allen. Oh. I'm in love with David Blau.
Wow. You were right. Him. Lion's going to get you out to a good start.
But he almost
and then
did.
Ruin your Thanksgiving.
Let him be your guy. Get on my corner.
No, anyone's guy. He might never start horses. Another game.
Yeah, he was the
he
backup.
Might never
the backup,
again.
And I love him. I hope you are full of food, but not full of football, because we've got a lot of it to review and a lot of it to preview. And let us get started. After a week of reports that Jason Garrett is now coaching for his job, the Cowboys had a chance to make a big statement on a big stage against the 8-3 Buffalo Bills. But instead, Dak Prescott played arguably his worst game of the season. Ezekiel Elliott tied a season low with only 12 carries. And no one else for the Cowboys really stepped up. Dallas lost 26-15. They now fall to 6-6 on the season. With all of that as a backdrop for what many were calling a must win, what does it all mean for Jason Garrett? Well, here's Jerry Jones.
I know Jason very well. I've had a wonderful opportunity to spend a football life with him. So I know him very well. And you know, without a doubt, you've seen it. Nobody is wants Jason, wants it to go. And I'm going to tell you this right now, he's got my back too. This is not the time. For me, I'm looking ahead at another ball game, and I'm looking ahead at winning five straight, and helping write a story that they'll talk about how it looked like you were down and out and got it done. I mean that. That's the way that I'm operating. Every decision that I make over the next month will be with an eye in mind to get us in the Super Bowl now. And I would normally say you're really smoking something. I normally would say that. But I know the room, and I see the room. And I'm the one that okayed and put the coaches that are in that room in there.
Wow. All right. Well, listen, Nick, you have to wonder, we're all...
Nothing. Too early in the morning, Bart.
Did Jasmine be smoking anything?
Yeah, because Jerry Jones must be drinking something. Because now he looks subdued, right? He was a guy that was talking all this stuff early in the week. He created the distraction. Now he wants to come. You know how, like, you ever get mad at your kids and then they do something afterwards, just like, whatever.
I already played that card.
Right.
I already played the you're grounded
he
for a month card.
He looked defeated. And Jason Garrett is in that. He's not capable of pushing a team over the top. Some of his decisions that he's made. Why would you go for it on fourth down when you're in field goal position, you kick a field goal, you go down 13, you have an opportunity because Steve Hoshka missed an extra point to maybe win with two more touchdowns in the game. Like, why are you going for it on the 20 for fourth down? Even if you get it, what does that mean? You still got 80 yards to go.
It certainly had the feel like Jason Garrett was coaching either a little more aggressively or maybe outside of the realm of what you would normally
or
see.
Or stupidly.
Going forward on fourth and one. Going forward on fourth and one way back when normally no one would. I just wonder if all of this, all the coaching, the turmoil, all this discourse, maybe distracted the Cowboys and cost them the game yesterday.
That's not why they lost. They lost because this is who they are. The Buffalo Bills got a winning record. Are the Buffalo Bills at the very least a decent team?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Above 500.
Then guess what? Then you get to beat the Dallas Cowboys this year. That's how it works. The Cowboys lost this game because they are a talented team that can't beat anybody that has even 75% of the talent that they have, and they cannot produce in the biggest spots of games. Bart, at one point last night, or yesterday afternoon, they had 31 first downs, over 400 yards of offense, and 7 points. That should not be possible unless you have a half dozen turnovers. Now, I know Dak had two brutal turnovers.
Yeah.
But even despite that, you should have produced enough offense to be in the game late. They abandoned Zeke. I do wonder if the pass-heavy game plan even early was part of Kellen Moore trying to shine up that resume like you talked about. Yep. Offensive coordinators in 2019 don't get new offensive coordinator jobs by having a great running game. They do it by having a wide-open passing attack. So I don't think that helped them. But if Jason Garrett had gotten a contract extension 3 days ago, they lose to the Buffalo Bills. And he's not going to get fired today, and so any injection of energy, injection of something is not going to happen for this team this season. Jerry made that clear yesterday. This is an underachieving, disappointing team that, by the way, was being carried along against worse opponents by their quarterback, who the last few weeks has not played well either. You said this was his worst game of the year. If it wasn't this, it was certainly last week in New England. Back-to-back winnable games. Mm-hmm. This one they should have won as a touchdown favorite, where they were, after being up 7-0, not competitive for the next 2.5 hours.
And what you just described is a front-running team, right? When everything's going right, they're high-fiving each other, they're looking excellent. Yep. But as soon as they run into a little bit of adversity, they start to fold. They start to tighten up. And you saw that on some of Dak's passes, right? He tightened up when it was time to make the big plays. You know, on the other side, you look at Josh Allen, he came up big, using plays with his legs, making winning plays. You talk about the 4th and 1, having a wherewithal to pick the ball up and not even understand that once the quarterback drops the ball, he's live. They're just sitting there watching him, and then when he muscles up on him and goes all Gronkowski on him, they have no answer.
It was
for
the single biggest play of the game.
Yes, absolutely.
The next play, they end up scoring a touchdown. That fumbled snap.
Or the Bill special? Was that the Bill special?
Well, whatever you want to call it. But that fumbled snap on 4th down is always results in turnover on downs.
Right.
Because it doesn't matter who recovers the fumble. You're not picking up the yardage.
You picked it up and stepped over two people and then slammed the other dude. That was the game in a microcosm. I'm bigger than you. I'm more physical than you. I'm more tougher than you mentally. Look at that. Get off me, little boy.
And then the next play was the other part of the microcosm of the game. We also somehow have a schematic advantage.
Yep.
We're gonna make you look foolish with a trick play after essentially Josh Allen. I mean, that's like a quarterback getting an interception, right? Not having an interception. That should have been Cowboys ball. You got an extra possession. You score a touchdown on the next play. And here's the part for Dallas, Jenna, that is, to me, you called them front runners. I think that's a perfect description. They got up 7-0. Once Buffalo tied the football game, here is how the Cowboys' possessions ended. Once it was 7-7, a Dak pick, a Dak fumble, a missed field goal after you don't take a shot to the end zone at the end of the half, another missed field goal, and then the other 4th down they went for that you're talking about when Dak skips the ball to Zeke. As soon as there was, Buffalo was like, oh no, we are here for a fight. We're not going to roll over. Yeah. We're not the Giants. We're not Washington. The Cowboys could not finish drives, and they abandoned Zeke, to me, way too early.
I mean, he didn't get a carry. I'm sorry, not to cut you off. He didn't get a carry, after 9 minutes and 40 seconds in the third quarter? He came out running the ball, you know,
12 for 71.
Run. Right, but then, you know, really the gamesmanship within the gamesmanship was early on when you talk about that halftime when McDermott took the timeout and he showed the cover zero blitz to see how they would respond to it. So now go back to the 4th down against Zeke. They anticipated the all-out blitz, but he knew how the Dallas Cowboys were going to respond to it. What do? They drop back in the zone, and Zeke, even if he catches the ball, has three defenders right there. So once again, it goes to situational football. It goes back to coaching, which tells you that Jason Garrett is not a great football coach.
Look, if you say this is back-to-back poor outings from Dak Prescott, at least you could look at last week and say they're on the road, they're in a terrible, weather was awful, they're playing against the Patriots, all of it. You're at home on Thanksgiving. The weather is perfect because you're indoors. You're playing in front of a national audience. Everything was set up for you to succeed, especially the kind of season that Dak Prescott was having. And now you say, well, if you're not going to fire Jason Garrett, what's going to change? What kind of infusion of energy are you now going to get to push yourself to the end of the season?
Remember what he said. He said, hey, every decision I make for the next 4 games is made with winning in mind. What decisions can you make? What are you going to do? Go get Dez Bryant off the scrap heap? What decisions can you make? It's no, you're out of moves, Jerry. Out of moves.
The only move he had right now, you're right, was to get rid of Jason Garrett. Does he make a mistake sticking with him here?
Well, yeah, I think, Absolutely. I said Jason Garrett should have been fired after the Patriot game, and the only reason you couldn't fire him after the Patriot game because you had a game 3 days, 4 days later. Well, now they have a full week. They do play on Thursday again, but they just played on Thursday. Yeah. So it's a regular week. They're not going to do it. Now, I want to make this clear. I do not think firing Jason Garrett fixes all that ails the Cowboys. I don't know that it fixes anything that ails the Cowboys. I do know that it is the only card you have left to play. Because to your point, there's no players available. I mean, I suppose they could try to sign Antonio Brown, but that's not going to fix what ails this team. Situationally, this team stinks. As far as schematically, this team does not go into games with an advantage. They are underachieving. And Dak Prescott, over the course of the season, the numbers look good. Against New Orleans, zero touchdowns, a pick, and a 73 rating. Against Green Bay, two touchdowns, three picks, and an 84 rating, and he was worse than that because he got a bunch of garbage yards at the end of the game when they were down 31-3. Against the Jets, no touchdowns, and an 89 rating. Against New England, zero touchdowns, one pick, and a 64 rating. And against Buffalo, as many touchdowns as turnovers, and could have had a third turnover late. Yeah. They just recovered it on fourth down. The only game where the Cowboys have lost, where Dak has played well all year, was the Vikings game. And what did... Now we go back to coaching. Yeah. What did they do in the Vikings game? They went away from Dak Prescott in the most critical moments of the game. They fed Zeke, they fed Zeke, they fed Zeke, instead of letting Dak try to win them that football game. This was a game where they could have fed Zeke. Instead, they tried to put it on Dak's shoulders, and they lose a game. The Bills are a good team-ish. They've beaten a bunch of bad teams. They're very well coached. They are very tough-nosed. Situationally, they are buttoned up, and the Cowboys are none of those things right now.
We call that Bortles ball.
Yeah, well, yesterday, Josh Allen way outplayed Dak Prescott, running the ball and throwing the ball. Of the weekend, the 10-1 49ers going up against the 9-2 Baltimore Ravens Sunday on Fox. Both teams boasting their most valued weapons. For the Ravens, that's Lamar Jackson, now tied for the most passing touchdowns in the NFL, ninth in the league in rushing yards. For the Niners, they're holding opponents to less than 250 yards per game. That is the best in the NFL. But how will that defense stop the unstoppable Lamar Jackson? Here's San Francisco's head coach, Kyle Shanahan.
He's just different in that he's just he's a running back when he has the ball. You know, with the other two guys, they can make a lot of plays with their legs and stuff, but eventually they're going to slide and things like that. This guy, he is a running back out there and a quarterback when he's throwing, but you know, he can run hard. You got to bring him down. He can take the hits, and he also can deliver them.
The distinction between the other two guys he was talking about, Kyler Murray and Russell Wilson, and what you have from Lamar Jackson week in and week out. Nick, who's got the edge here, Lamar or that 49ers defense?
Lamar right now is overwhelming favorite to win the league MVP. I think he likely will. He's been sensational. He's proven any of the doubters, at least temporarily, if not permanently, wrong. And anyone that said he should change position and actually be a running back or wide receiver looks like a fool. With all that said, I like the Niners defense this weekend. I like the Niners this weekend. I think the Niners can present a very unique problem for Baltimore offensively and defensively, by the way. But as far as the Niners defense against Lamar and the Baltimore offense, I think the Niners have the ability to create pressure with just four, which is the single best thing you can do in defensive football. So you can have seven guys in coverage, and they can do... not the same thing, because nobody's really trying to do the same thing the Chargers did against Lamar in the postseason, where they had seven defensive backs on the field.
Yeah.
But what they can do is they can have seven guys whose pure responsibilities are coverage and spying Lamar, while also not giving Lamar a lot of time to throw, because those four down linemen can get after the quarterback. So for that reason, because they can create pressure up the middle and off the edge, I think the Niners defense, which is as good as any unit in football outside of the Patriots secondary, that Niners front, I think they have the advantage this Sunday.
I know you got a politician suit on today, man, but you're going to lose this debate because it's not because I'm just a homer, because I played for the Baltimore Ravens, just that I've seen the 49ers struggle against a quarterback that's similar to you know, Lamar Jackson and Kyler Murray, but also you look at really, you talk about that front four. That front four is going to hurt them because they're a 4-3 defense. What that creates is a tremendous amount of lanes, running lanes and throwing lanes. And what happens is because Lamar Jackson is such a premier athlete, it's always going to hold the backside defensive end, which is Bosa. You know, what really, if the San Francisco 49ers want to have any form of success, they're going to have to take a page out of the Ravens book in the Super Bowl. No matter what, no matter if he's handing the ball off or not, when he's in that RPO type of posture, he's live. So he's a smaller guy. You hit him every play. And early on, you give up yards. Remember in the Super Bowl, the Ravens hit Kaepernick every single play, and it took a toll on his body, and they got out of that offense. But you talk about the lanes that are going to be open. And what happens is you're going to have to creep up. When you creep up, because Baltimore plays with three tight ends, and they can double team everybody, they can get behind your linebackers because your linebackers feel like they can't, you know, wait. They have to come up and try and attack. And that's when it's going to create all these scenes for Hollywood Brown, for Willie Snead, for all those receivers. That's the difference. Last year, when the Chargers did that, they were able to do that because Lamar Jackson wasn't a threat to throw the ball because he didn't have any weapons. Now he has home run hitters that you have to double, because if you don't put one or two on top of Hollywood Brown, he can run past you. We saw it last week. So this is just a bad matchup. Their best chance is to play keep away from this defense and run the ball, because you say everything you want about San Francisco, they're 19th in stopping the run. That is a bad recipe. On the road, playing at 9 o'clock, your body clock time, they better get out to a fast start. Jimmy G is going to have to take care of the football, not like he's been reckless. He's been reckless with the football the last couple of weeks. Action Jackson, not only has he been, you know, flawless, no turnovers, he hasn't punted in two games.
Right. Well, listen,
the Ravens have the best kicker, too, in the league.
The Ravens are the hottest team in the league right now. Lamar's the hottest player. The Ravens are near touchdown favorites. They're at home. I understand all of that. I also have been more skeptical than most on San Francisco. So people are probably surprised I like San Francisco in this game. I just think the Niners are going to put Lamar in a position where they make him throw the football. And as even though he is so much better than he was last year at that, I still think that is the way to get to Baltimore. Okay. If you can remove Lamar as a runner from the game plan, and your point of repeatedly knocking him to the ground even when he doesn't have the ball, I think it's a great one. Understanding we might give up a 15-yard run. Yeah. When he hands the ball off that we otherwise wouldn't give up, because we are going to focus in the first quarter of making him feel that we are here and we're going to be here all game, and how much that can take them out of their game plan. One of these teams, unless this is a very close game throughout, is going to, we're going to be able to see them in the position I think a lot of us have been waiting to see them in. How do they respond to being down 10 points? What is the counterpunch for the Niners or the Ravens in this spot? And on the other side of the ball, I do like the Niners' ability to repeatedly rush the football on offense to play keep away from Lamar, which would be the most effective strategy.
But here's the problem, because Wink Martindale, because he uses four DBs, now you have to identify who's coming, right? So the center's got to figure out 5-0. 5-0 means us five bigs have those five bigs. The problem is the Ravens don't play with five bigs half the time. You know, they have Jimmy Smith, Carr, Humphreys, and I'm forgetting one, Jimmy Smith, right? So what happens is if Jimmy Smith's in the box, you saw last week they were blitzing both corners because they have four corners on the field. They feel comfortable in exposing the edges because they have physical corners that can blitz. Jimmy G's going to have to recognize where the blitz is coming from. Nobody blitzes their DBs more than Wink Martindale, and they's gonna have to identify, and Jimmy G's been getting away from that because he's been able to just rely on running the ball, and if anything breaks down, I know Kittle's is gonna be open.
And your point on the Ravens defensive backs is so they start the year because of injury and because they hadn't made the trade for Marcus Peters.
Right.
They got Humphreys, they got the ageless Brandon Carr. They then trade for Peters and get Jimmy Smith back from injury, and all of a sudden you've got four solid corners.
And Marlon Humphreys, physical guys.
Absolutely. And so that is where the Ravens on the year, their defensive profile is not of a great defense, but you really have to look at it from what they've done since about week seven, since when they acquired Marcus Peters, since they got healthier. I mean, that's as great as Lamar and the offense has been. The defense has been sensational of late as well. No, I think it's a great matchup. I'm really excited to see how Lamar deals with the best defensive front in football, because there is no front in the AFC he's going to face that is anywhere close to what San Francisco can present.
Quickly, who needs the win more?
Oh, that's really interesting. I think the Ravens are in...
They're coast mode.
Like, I mean, they're in a position where their worst-case scenario is probably the 2 seed already because they've beaten Houston and Kansas City's maybe too far back. San Francisco knows with a loss, Seattle's they could right be the there. 5.
Exactly.
They could fall away to the 5. So I think San Francisco needs it.
Cowboys coming in looking to silence the doubters after a week of turmoil surrounding Jason Garrett. They did themselves exactly 0 favors. Dak at 355 yards on 49 attempts. He threw 2 touchdowns, but also threw a pick.
Tight.
And he lost a fumble. Meanwhile, Zeke tied a season low. Only 12 carries. So what does it all mean for Jason Garrett? Here's Jerry Jones.
I know Jason very well. I've had a wonderful opportunity to spend a football life with him. So I know him very well. And you know, without a doubt, you've seen it. Nobody is wants Jason, wants it to go. And I'm going to tell you this right now, he's got my back too. This is not the time. For me, I'm looking ahead at another ball game, and I'm looking ahead at winning 4 or 5 straight, and helping write a story that they'll talk about how it looked like you were down and out and got it done. I mean that. That's the way that I'm operating. Every decision that I make over the next month will be with an eye in mind to get us in the Super Bowl now. And I would normally say you're really smoking something. I normally would say that. But I know the room, and I see the room. And I'm the one that okayed and put the coaches that are in that room in there.
Well, Jerry, if I'm smoking something, you get into contact because you sound like you're hot. What are you talking about? What moves do you have left, bro? Like, listen, it sounded to me like he was reading an obituary. It sounded like he was doing a eulogy for Jason Garrett. So go ahead and listen, it happens to us all. We all get fired. That's the beauty of the game. You know, we all get fired. We all leave. Very few of us walk away from the game. Hell, Peyton Manning got fired. Jason Garrett, you on deck. You remember our favorite movie, Life? Yeah. Walking a mile? You walking a mile.
He was doing a eulogy, but no dead body, because there's not going to be a dead body, at least until after the season with Jason Garrett. But, Nick, as unlikely as it probably is, at this point, do the Cowboys have any chance of recovering from this and making a playoff run?
No.
They very easily could come out of the division.
No. They cannot very easily come out of the division anymore. Not
anymore. You see Mitch Trubisky?
No. Not anymore. Like, I'm glad you mentioned Mitch Trubisky. They're in Chicago next week.
Like Josh Allen.
Why would a game in Chicago go drastically differently than the game at home against Buffalo when those two teams are so similar?
Yeah.
Now, the Bills have been more buttoned up this year. They've been better. But stylistically, excellent defenses, limited quarterbacks that are better probably runners than throwers of the football,
yeah,
who occasionally can have really good games if they have a lot of time. Now, Josh Allen's better than Trubisky, but that's a very low bar to clear.
Right.
But that game's in Chicago as opposed to at home in Dallas. Like, it's over for the Cowboys. They are more likely to finish this season below 500 than they are to go on any type of playoff run.
This is the must win right here.
Well, of course it's a must win.
This is the must.
But I would argue yesterday was a must win.
I would too.
Yeah.
They are at Chicago, home for the Rams, at Philly. So Chicago will, I don't think they'll be a favorite in that game, but it'll be close as far as the point spread
goes. Field goal kicking is horrible.
The Rams don't have an athletic quarterback, but again, a team that's going to have to rely on their defense, ask their quarterback not to make mistakes, and then a Philly team that has been better than Dallas this year. I know Dallas beat Philly. Philly's done something Dallas has shown no ability to do. You know what Philly did?
Beat Green Bay.
They beat, exactly right. They beat Green Bay, and if I'm not mistaken, they also beat Buffalo. the Cowboys know. It is one thing to say, well, maybe they can sneak in because of the division. Not when you play like this.
Yeah.
And not when you did not take advantage of, early in the season, at the very least, the game. They went 1-3 against the AFC East. They lost that Jets game. At 7-5, they'd still be as bad as they are. But you might say, well, they already beat Philly. There's still a game up on them. They have a margin of error. Philly's about to get to 6-6. Philly's going to beat Miami this weekend. And so I just, to me, Bart, it is, they're not going to fire Jason Garrett, fine, whatever. But no, the Cowboys, you are, through 12 games, you are what we think you are. And what the Cowboys are is an underachieving, talented football team.
And if you fire Jason Garrett, who are you putting there? Kellen Moore? Rod Marinelli. I mean, Kellen Moore remind me of Kyle Shanahan in the Super Bowl. Once Julio catches the ball, game over. But you wanted to gloss up that resume. It looked like he was hearing that, hey, Jason Garrett may be gone. Let me show everybody what I can do. And he got too cute. You know, Zeke, 71 yards on 12 carries. I mean, you keep feeding that man, and you also allow your offensive line and play action and all the things to work. Whenever I see Dak Prescott throwing the ball over 40 times, you know that something went wrong. He's a guy that you have to still keep under control. Yes, he's a talented player, but he's never a guy that you're supposed to let throw the ball that many times.
You want about CB12 and his recent play, whether it's because of him or in spite of him, he's right where he always is, and that's on top of the conference at 10-1. This week could pose an extra challenge, though, as Brady has been limited in practice with elbow issues. So, Nick, let's cut right to the chase. Who you got in this one, New England or Houston?
Patriots. Listen, I said before the Baltimore game, I thought the Patriots were going to lose three of their next five. I thought they'd lose to Baltimore, Philly, and Kansas City. They're obviously, they didn't lose to Philly. I didn't think because of the coaching discrepancy,
right,
the Cowboys could beat them. And the coaching discrepancy is even greater in this one against the Houston, with Bill O'Brien going up against Bill Belichick and that crew. The Houston Texans do one thing exceptionally well. Deshaun Watson throwing the deep ball. For some reason, schematically, they don't want to lean on that. They want to pretend they are a big, physical, tough, hard. They are none of those things.
Right.
Even though they traded all those picks for Tunsil and drafted a first-round tackle, Titus Howard, they are not a big, physical football team, so they squander opportunities. But the one thing you do well is the one thing no one can do against New England,
right,
which is throw the deep ball, which is be effective through the air. So, no, I'd be shocked if the Patriots lose this game. I would be shocked if Bill O'Brien can forget out-duel Bill Belichick, play him even close to a draw. And so, yeah, I mean, Brady is a problem for the Patriots right now, but not a big enough problem that they can't handle the Houston Texans.
For me, when you talk about the coaching discrepancy, you know that it goes directly to, you know, the Patriots. But the one chance I give him, I've seen Deshaun Watson be special.
Yes.
And he's been in big games where he shouldn't be in it. And they have just enough weapons, because when you think about Gilmore versus Hopkins, that's not going to be a one-sided fight.
Nope.
Now, this is going to
be
something.
It's not going to be Amari Cooper where he gets shut out.
Right. Hopkins, he's not going to get shut out. But then when you think about Kenny Stills and Fuller matched up against Chong, who, you know, it's been an illness in Foxborough as well. I think a lot of guys have flu-like symptoms, so we don't know if they get in the track meet, you know, as far as dehydration and all those type of things. I'm sure they're sucking down a bunch of Pedialyte right now. But, you know, when I look at the capability for them to be explosive on offense and get big plays, easy plays like Baltimore did, I think that they have a shot in Deshaun Watson with his legs out in space with those big, you know, physical linebackers.
Here's the other problem, though, on the other side of the ball. As much as the Patriots' offense has struggled, and I know we're going to get into that, is the Texans' defense has been bad all year. Been even worse since J.J. Watt went out for the season.
Yeah.
But where they are particularly egregious are the two spots where coaching can come into play the most and where the Patriots can take advantage. They are the 31st ranked red zone defense, or third down defense, and the 32nd ranked red zone defense.
Yeah.
So in the critical moments, that's where the Texans defense has been the absolute worst. We know the Patriots struggle to have repeated drives full length of the football field. If they get any of those against this defense, you got to figure it will be 7 instead of 3. Another reason to me, the Patriots are the clear pick this weekend.
You mentioned it, Bart. A lot of this Patriots team suffering from the flu, held out of practice on Wednesday. We hear words now that Tom Brady's suffering from a little bit of an elbow injury. He was sort of limited in practice. What do you want to see from this offense, knowing what they've been through this week? What do you want to see from Tom Brady and the offense if they are going to get to the Super Bowl?
Oh, well, if the Patriots get to the Super Bowl, it's not going to be because of the offense.
Right.
I do not think that there's all of a sudden going to be some great vintage Tom Brady performance.
Right.
He's 42 years old. He's in year 20. He does have limited weapons. They have a limited offensive line, even though Isaiah Wynn being back does help. Listen, if the Patriots offense all of a sudden transforms into a top 12 offense, not only will they win the Super Bowl, they will coast to the Super Bowl. The defense and the coaching are that good. The question is, can the Patriots get to and win a Super Bowl with an offense that is not a top 20 offense? Right now, I don't think they can. I do not think the Patriots, as presently constituted, and no change is coming. They're not bringing AB back. Is going to have enough potency to get through Baltimore, Kansas City, whomever they have in the postseason.
AB and Dez.
And so, yeah, Jenna, are you saying if Brady throws for 450 and four scores, will I change my opinion? Sure, but that is not going to happen.
Okay, maybe they're a top 20 offense, but what has Bill Belichick added to that offense do? Is it top 20 offense plus Bill Belichick? Could that sort of overcome their deficiencies on offense?
It's tough because I think they're going to go through two teams that don't fear them. Andy Reid don't fear them. They respect them, and the Baltimore Ravens clearly doesn't fear them as well because they've gone up into Foxborough through Harbaugh's time there and been able to win in a hostile environment. And the physicality. I think really the biggest issues that's hurting his team is Devlin not being there because they don't have the power running game and they don't have Gronkowski to set the edge. So now they have to figure out how are we going to get to our edges and really have a good running game. We'll see if the rookie Neal can be one of those hybrid tight end set the edge guys. And Mohamed Sanu, his first game, he had a tremendous chemistry with Brady in the first game. I think he had like 11 receptions. And, you know, now that allows teams not to just be able to bracket Edelman, but it's still going to be tough. Them getting the overall record, best record, and having a bye and letting the playoffs go through Gillette Stadium is a key component to if they're going to even have an opportunity to go to the Super Bowl.
Well, and it is. There's only a handful of teams in the AFC that are real true contenders, right? So the Patriots, obviously, Baltimore, obviously. I think Kansas City is still a true contender. Yeah. Houston would argue they are. They lost to Baltimore already. Let's see how they play against Houston, and then they have Kansas City next week. The fifth team on that list would be the Bills, and the Bills played them once already this year. It's 16-10. Yep. They play them again here in a few weeks. If I'm wrong and they lose to Houston, then there's real, real concerns for the Patriots because, well, who are you going to have to beat to get to the Super Bowl? Baltimore, Houston, you play Kansas City the following week. If they win this week and win next week, not only will they be the one seed, they'll be saying, okay, there's the one team that we haven't beaten in Baltimore we'll get another chance for in the postseason. I think the Patriots win this week, but it's not going to be because the offense all of a sudden flips a switch.
Back here on First Things First, talking Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs. According to our friends at Fox Bet, KC favored by 10 points against the division rival Raiders, whom they played this weekend. Quite a spread for two teams separated by just one game. Nick Wright, should the Chiefs be on upset alert?
Homer. No.
What was that?
He called me a homer. No.
Oh, okay.
That you could be from, you don't have to even be from the continental United States. You'd be like our friend Stink from Alaska. Mm-hmm. And you know that however flawed you think the Chiefs may be, here's one thing they don't do the last 5 years. Pre-Mahomes, just under Andy Reid, lose to divisional opponents. Last 26 games against the AFC West, 24-2. Those two losses, both 1-point losses, both after very questionable pass interference calls in the end zone in the final 10 seconds of football games. They have run this division more than the Patriots have won the AFC East, run the AFC East over the last 5 years. They have the best interdivisional record over the last 5 years of anybody. They already went to Oakland, played one quarter, and whooped them.
They
were down
10-0
after the first quarter. They got Mahomes threw four deep touchdown passes in the second quarter, and they coasted home. And Oakland, man, if Oakland was a team to be feared, you cannot let what happened last week against Bart's beloved New York Jets, speaking of homers, Bart's beloved New York Jets beat you. Like, the Raiders had a really golden opportunity here. If they had beaten the Jets, they would be 7-4. Kansas City would be 7-4. You would be coming into the game with a chance to take the lead in the AFC West for the first time at any point in the season in, I think, 5 years. Or no, 4 years since the year where Carr broke his leg at the end of the year. Yeah. And instead, you fell on your face against the Jets. So I know the Chiefs weren't overly impressive in Mexico City. They're coming off a bye. It's the healthiest they have been all year long. And that, to me, Bart, is the key to Kansas City if they are going to be a contender. I think Mahomes and Tyreek Hill have been on the field together for 7.5 quarters all year. Yeah. They lost their left tackle very early in the year, finally got him back. This is the healthiest version the Chiefs are going to see. So, no, I don't think the Chiefs should be on upset alert at all this weekend.
Yeah, but they should make sure that they go in there with a healthy respect for the Raiders, because just because you dominated a team before doesn't mean that you dominate them again. And we all know Andy Reid's record coming off of a bye. He's damn near unbeatable. But if it is one shot, one glimmer of hope, I believe, for the Raiders, it's going to be Josh Jacobs, you know, keeping Mahomes off the field and play the keep away game and just try and methodically move the ball, win the time of possession. But it's going to be incumbent on Derek Carr to make sure that he's able to get 7 instead of 3, which is hard to do. And they've played well in spurts. They've got out to fast leads. I believe in that game they were out to a 10-0 lead before Kansas City came and smacked them around a little bit. But this defense for Kansas City is still untested. They're unproven. They're getting better when Jones came back. But I just believe that you can have a shot if they can turn the ball over, get extra possessions. But even with that, I know I'm lying to myself.
Yeah, I mean, listen, Josh Jacobs would have, and Josh Jacobs has been excellent.
Almost 1,000 yards already.
And if it wasn't for what Kyler's doing, he might be the favorite for Offensive Rookie of the Year.
Yeah.
He's going to have his best game of the season, and you're going to have to turn Mahomes over, and you're going to have to take that Arrowhead crowd out of it early, which is damn near impossible in a game against their biggest rival. This is not because this is the city where I'm from. This is a bad matchup for Oakland. It's been a bad matchup for Oakland for 5 years, and the Raiders, it's not just the AFC West that they might have left on the table last week against the Jets. It's the chance to be a really surprising good story of being a playoff team by getting that final wild card spot out of the AFC. They should be 7-4. Right. Instead, they're 6-5, and they're going to leave this game 6-6, saying what happened to our season that quickly. Yeah. I would be shocked if Kansas City loses this football game. More shocked than I was against Tennessee. Because Tennessee, and they had Tennessee beat before they blew it at the end.
Yeah.
Tennessee, to me, has more ways to beat you, especially since they went to Tannehill, than the Raiders do right now.
We've seemingly abandoned Patrick Mahomes as an MVP candidate just because of what Lamar's doing and the consistent play of Russell Wilson, and obviously Patrick Mahomes was hurt. And we're not really talking about the Chiefs right now because they had a couple of flubs, especially what happened down in Mexico. But this Kansas City team... I know that Bart is probably not as high on them as you are right now, but do you still have the same faith in them? Like, what do you expect to see from Patrick Mahomes? I know how good they usually are coming off of a bye, but do you expect them to come out and throw it all out there, finally having Tyreek Hill back out there?
I expect them to come out and light the scoreboard up. I expect them to come out and look like the best offense in the league. But the problem with Kansas City, when you're such a dynamic team that can put up points, they can't salt the game away. And that's what concerns me, the fact that they don't have a power running game that when they go up by 3 scores, game over, where they can go on these 8 to 10 play drives. Because what happens is, as much as he throws the ball, if they're incomplete, it stops the clock. And it allows this defense to get back on the field, and it gets exposed. That's my biggest concern for them, is the fact that they don't have a power running game, that they don't have somebody like a LeGarrette Blount, somebody that can come in and fall forward for 2-3.5 yards and be able to soak the game away. And that's going to come back to bite them, especially when you talk about playing in November, December, January. The elements play a big role in how far the ball travels as far as punts, kickoffs, field goals, attempts, and things of that.
Kansas City has lost the right to feel like that there's any game, and so I guess Raider game included, that they're a shoo-in, that they guaranteed to win, because they fell flat on their face against Indy. Indy's a decent team. Yeah. Houston beat them, and then the Tennessee game is really alarming because they just needed to salt it away, to your point. With that said, there is not a team in the league that plays the Chiefs and feels good about it. There's not a team in the league that looks at the Chiefs and says, oh, we got this one.
Right.
Because the Chiefs offense still, when fully functional, fully healthy, is the best offense in football by a mile.
Yeah.
Like, they are top 3 offense statistically this year. Patrick Mahomes has played 4 healthy games the whole season. Tyreek Hill missed the first after week 2. He missed the first, or week 1.5, I guess.
Yeah.
He missed the first 6 weeks of the year after that. And they are still putting up those types of points.
No lead is safe.
No lead is safe, and there is no team they can't beat.
Right.
Now, they've shown there's a lot of teams they can lose to, which was different than last year. But this is still a team that, I don't know your opinion, would it shock you if they came out of the AFC?
No,
not
at all. Because they've already beaten Baltimore, and you can tell the pressure, that just the threat of knowing how powered this offense is. Baltimore went in, they did things that were uncharacteristic. They were going for it on 4th down.
Every time.
In their territory, in scoring territory, instead of taking 3. Because you know that 3 won't allow you to beat the Kansas City Chiefs, because they're so dynamic that in an instant, in blink of an eye, that they can score in 2-3 play drives.
Listen, there's seven teams in the league that are viable Super Bowl contenders. The Chiefs are one of those teams. The Raiders are not. I think that will show up Sunday afternoon.
Back here first things first, now joined by Super Bowl champ Plaxico Burress. Welcome to the show, Plaxico.
That's my dog.
How's everybody doing this morning, man? Nobody wants to work the day after Thanksgiving.
They're lazy.
Just us.
Turkey coma.
We never sleep. All right, Plaxico, let's dive into the biggest game of the weekend. It's the 10-1 49ers against the 9-2 Baltimore Ravens. It's Sunday. It's on Fox. Both teams boasting their most valued weapons. For the Ravens, Lamar Jackson now tied for the most passing touchdowns in the NFL, and he's ninth in the league in rushing yards. For the Niners, they're holding opponents to less than 250 yards per game. That is best in the NFL. But how will that defense stop the unstoppable Lamar Jackson? Here's San Francisco's head coach, Kyle Shanahan.
He's just different in that he's just he's a running back when he has the ball. You know, with other two guys, they can make a lot of plays with their legs and stuff, but eventually they're going to slide and things like that. This guy, he is a running back out there and a quarterback when he's throwing, but he can run hard. You got to bring him down. He can take the hits, and he also can deliver them.
It's a big compliment to Lamar Jackson. The other two guys, obviously Kyler Murray and Russell Wilson, that he's referring to there. So, Plaxico, who do you think has the edge, Lamar or this San Francisco 49ers defense?
I think Lamar Jackson has the edge because he's going to keep the defense on the toes. This offense is really the first time that some of these defensive coordinators are seeing this offense. So, you know, they have to, on defense, you can't really scheme it. You have to go out and react because when you're saying it for the first time, it's explosive.
Right.
And nobody has really found out a way to contain him. He's basically a matchup nightmare for defenses because what he does on defense is if the offense brings in two tight ends or three tight ends, usually the defense stays in base.
Right.
So if you stay in base and he gets out on the edge, then you don't have enough guys that are fast enough to contain him. And, you know, he's just a matchup nightmare.
I feel like most people associate you and you won your championship with the Giants, but you were 13 on a 13-3 Steeler team with Cordell Stewart, right?
Which is probably the best team I ever played on.
How much of what you see the Ravens doing with Lamar reminds you of what you guys were doing a little over a decade ago in that offense and how much problems that presented defenses?
Well, it's really a different kind of style of offense because I played in the I-formation offense and you had Jerome Bettis in the backfield and you knew that he was getting the ball 30 times. Mm-hmm. So this offense is nothing like the Pittsburgh Steelers when I played in 02. You know, you just have to kind of figure it out on the fly. I think the best way to contain this offense and Lamar Jackson is basically like a cover two. And if he gets out on the edge, at least you have some corners that can come up and make some plays. But if you play man-to-man on him and the defensive backs turn their back to the wide receivers and he gets out of the pocket, before the defense recognizes it, he's 20, 30
he's
yards
gone.
Downfield.
Yep.
The only thing they can do is take away the rush lanes and the throwing lanes in the middle. When we used to play Michael Vick, what we used to do is we was always, you know, give him a predictable out, right? So we would take all our linemen, stuff them in inside gaps, flush them to one side where we can get our athletes knowing where he's going. Right. The problem is if you just go up the field, he can come step through the lane with four men rushing. You know, you got four men rushing. They got two tight ends on the line. So now they have six lanes and six options for him to figure out where he's going to go. So if you have a spy and a spy is on the left side, he can exit out of the right side. So the spy isn't even helping. Right. The problem is, like, remember when the Wildcat came and took over the NFL?
Yep.
And nobody knew how to respond to it because for the first time, it was 11 on 11. Usually when you go against a team, it's 11 on 10 because the quarterback hands the ball off and he's dead for the play. But now they've come with so many different formations. They got gun pistol, you know, jumbo package, and they're spreading them out. And what makes it a problem is their tight ends are viable receivers. They're great receivers. So if you come out there like Plex said with this heavy package, they'll break the formation. So now you got a linebacker or a safety one-on-one on an island with a pass-catching tight end. And Lamar Jackson has improved himself since what we saw the Chargers do to him last year, meaning that he's more accurate. And that man right there, Hollywood Brown, has really made him dynamic because you have to keep a safety damn near over the top of him because he stretches the field and opens the entire playing field open.
Listen, we're all give the Ravens immense credit. It's not only did they go all in on Lamar despite the rough playoff game, but they built their team with his exact skill set in mind.
Yeah.
Not only getting Mark Ingram, but tight ends that they know can block and be big pass catchers. Instead of targeting, for example, Odell. You know what I mean? Nope. We need a number. We need a big.
Don't fit our style.
It doesn't fit exactly what they're trying to do, even if Odell is a higher level player than the guys they brought in because of what the versatility the tight ends add. So and that's been a huge part of their success and Lamar's success thus far this season. The reason I think San Francisco has the edge is because San Francisco can create pressure with just those four guys.
See, but here's the problem. Like, when you say that, just like when Michael Vick was in the league, right, he holds your backside defensive end. Yeah. He can't flatten out because if he pull it, it's barbecue chicken. And also, not only does he hold the backside defensive end, he holds the backside linebacker. Because the backside linebacker, if he keeps it, you don't want to put one defensive end in space. He'll circle the defense, and when he gets that, it's explosive offense. See, the problem is you have to predict, they say, and the best chance they have is like the Ravens did Kaepernick in the Super Bowl. Hit him every play. We're going to give up big yardage just to make sure it's not a home run and see when we get him down. I'm not saying do nothing dirty, but make sure you land. If you got to get a couple body weight penalties, then take the body weight penalties. But we're going to make him have to play left-handed.
How do you game plan Lamar Moore? For his throwing or for his running?
I think you have to go out and defend both because he's a quarterback first. And he makes that statement week in and week out. He's looking to throw the football. He wants to throw the football. In the game last week against the Chargers.
Against the Rams.
Against the Rams. I saw last week a few times that they were trying to spy him with the middle linebacker. And what that does is when Lamar's in the pocket and he's not getting out of the pocket, now you lose a man in coverage. So now if you're in a four-man front, you only got six guys in coverage, and you got a middle linebacker just standing in space. And
killing grass.
And he's just completing the ball over the middle for touchdown.
And spying Lamar, especially with the linebacker, has been a fool's errand all year for the reasons you're talking about, the limitations in coverage, but also because he's a better athlete than whoever the hell your middle linebacker is.
Right.
He's going to be faster than him. He's exactly right. So that's just a wasted body. Like, that is not there are certain mobile quarterbacks that spying makes a lot of sense with. You could argue, hell, the guy we saw yesterday against the Cowboys, Josh Allen. Yeah. Josh Allen's a good athlete, but your middle linebacker, if he's a good athlete, should be able to match speed with him.
Right.
So spying him makes sense. Spying Lamar is not going to be the way to beat him.
It makes no sense.
And I agree with you. He does want to throw the ball. And he has improved immensely throwing the football. Yeah. But where he terrifies teams right now is with his legs and that Ravens running game, which opens up the passing game. What's incumbent upon the Niners is taking that away first. And if he beats you the way he beat Miami in week one by throwing the ball all over the field, then you tip your cap. If he can throw the ball like that against a really good defense, then there is no answer for him right now.
You know what terrifies me? Jimmy G throwing into tight windows against that elite defense that have a bunch of ball hawks that not only when they get it in their hands, they taking it to the house, making house calls.
I also think you got to give the offensive line from Baltimore a lot of credit because I don't think we've seen the offensive line neutralize Aaron Donald the way that they did. They basically neutralized Aaron Donald, and they had the inline on the man of scrimmage, on the line of scrimmage, Clay Matthews in the Matrix. He didn't know what was going on out there.
All right, now on to Aaron Rodgers and the Packers trying to right the ship after getting destroyed by the 49ers in week 12. Lucky for them, there are calm seas ahead in Sunday's matchup against the 2-9 Giants. Just don't tell the Giants that. But Aaron Rodgers knows it's on him to turn things around. Take a listen.
We're right in the mix where we want to be, playing meaningful games in December. You know, but I think we got to play a little bit better going forward if we want to get to where we want to go. This team has obviously a lot of goals. It starts with the North, and everything kind of opens up from there. The key is for us is we're going to obviously have to stay healthy, but we got to play a little bit better on all three phases. Offensively, you know, I got to take the lead and get hot in December here. We got to start finding ways to get the ball to our guys all the time.
Nick, from what you've seen out of Aaron Rodgers this season, you expect him to suddenly get hot and make a Super Bowl run?
I think they absolutely can. They're my Super Bowl pick, and through 11 weeks, I had hoped they'd be 9-2. They are 8-3 going into the game last week in San Francisco. I obviously foolishly believed they could win. Not only did they not win, they got annihilated. And I still believe they can make a Super Bowl run. I think they have to avoid San Francisco on their path. They've got a bully that they can't beat up, but there's another kid on the block that maybe can, and they can maybe beat that kid up. So they need that guy to take care of their guy, and then they try to take care of him. But the question about Rodgers is the incumbent one, because Aaron Rodgers turns 36 years old in a couple days. And we have been much like the example I've used is Carmelo Anthony and Dwayne Wade were maybe led astray a bit by how great LeBron was in years 14, 15, 16, 17, changed what their realistic expectations of where they should be, should have been in their careers those years. Tom Brady winning an MVP at age 40. Drew Brees nearly winning an MVP last year, I believe at age 39, changed all of our expectations, pardon me, all of our expectations for how good quarterbacks are going to be in their late 30s. Ben Roethlisberger's elbow popped. Eli Manning got benched. Phillip Rivers is clearly on his way out. Aaron Rodgers, just a couple draft classes behind those guys, right? Aaron, now, he didn't start.
He sat a few years,
and so I think he's fresher, and I don't think he is that close to the end. But is he still in his prime? When they made the coaching change, Bart, we said you've got to make the most that you have of Aaron Rodgers' prime. Mm-hmm. You got to make the most of what's left of it.
Yeah.
Is there any left of it? I think there is. I think he shows it over the rest of the season. They're going to be favored in four of their final five games. The only game they'll be an underdog is at Minnesota, a team they've already beaten. But Aaron Rodgers has played very well this year. He needs to play great if they're going to offset some of their deficiencies in run defense, some of their other deficiencies on the team, if they're going to compete with a team as complete as New Orleans, if they're going to have any chance to upset San Francisco if they play them again. So I still think they can. I'm not going to change my Super Bowl pick.
Yeah.
But the reason I picked them was because I thought Aaron Rodgers would be league MVP this year. He hasn't played quite to that level. He needs to over the final third of the season.
See, I picked Green Bay to represent the NFC in the Super Bowl as well, and it was because I thought that finally they're doing something to preserve his prime, right? We saw you talk about Tom Brady. Well, what did they do? They got him a running game, and we all, you know, kind of blinked the eye at it that they brought in Sony Michel. They went out and got another left tackle, mm-hmm. and Isaiah Wynn. And then also we witnessed this with Drew Brees as well. So now we're in an era of load management. So what did they essentially do for Aaron Rodgers this year? They gave him load management. They gave him a defense so he didn't have to put it all on his shoulders. They gave him a running game and Aaron Jones that can, you know, all he has to do is turn around and hand the ball off. And all he has to do is be special in spurts. So is Aaron Rodgers still capable of being a elite MVP caliber quarterback? Of course he can. I feel like they finally put a team around there that can complement, you know, what he does. And also gave him a defense where it is not all on him for 16 games. He'll become Superman again, I believe, in the playoffs when he puts himself at risk. He's been injured the last couple of years. He's finally healthy because they're protecting him with a run game.
So what makes you think he could be that MVP caliber kind of quarterback again?
Because he doesn't have to do it consistently, right? We saw Drew Brees last year trying to do too much. He got a tired arm and he couldn't throw the ball in the playoffs. He's still Aaron Rodgers. He still can buy time with his legs. He still does the little things that all great quarterbacks do. Change his rhythm at the line of scrimmage. Great hard count. Catch you changing in personnels, getting free plays, cheap plays. You know, it's not always about the physical part. It's about when these quarterbacks get to that Jedi type of mindset, it's when the body and mind meets. And that's what makes them so difficult because they do the different things. Their football acumen, his football IQ is so high. And, you know, it's just like you said, the bully beat the bully. They can't beat San Francisco because just stylistically it's not a great matchup. But they can beat New Orleans, who's right. not as physical.
And New Orleans might be able to beat San Francisco.
Right, New Orleans
or Seattle could beat San Francisco.
Exactly, and then they can beat, they're capable of beating those teams. So we always have that one team that's just a bad matchup for us. It's only, the good thing is it's only one and not the rest of the NFC / the NFL.
And lastly, the other reason that I believe in the Packers and Rodgers' ability to be the guy he was a few years ago is that when we talk about quarterbacks not having a bunch of weapons, like with Brady, we've talked about that. If you're a great quarterback and your weapons are limited, you become a very good quarterback. That's what's happened to Rodgers. Remember, Devontae Adams was out for 6 weeks, and his numbers are very good but not great. They didn't fall off a cliff. He's now going to have his full complement of weapons, you would think, moving forward. That should help them a ton. And aside from that Niner game, he does such a great job of not turning the ball over. Only two interceptions on the year, lost that fumble against the Niners. That's always going to keep them alive late in these games.
Jimmy Graham is a...
He's got to be
borderline.
Jimmy Graham's got to be
I was going to say the B word.
No, he's got to be better.
They'd be better with Jared Cook.
Bum.
Sorry. Bum. Okay. Let's cut to the chase. Who you got in this one, Patriots or Texans?
I mean, I've been watching this game for too long. New England Patriots. The Houston Texans, doesn't matter what year it is, doesn't matter how much optimism they got. Remember the year the Texans were, I think, the last remaining undefeated team? Yeah. They got all those fancy Letterman jackets for a nationally televised game. New England then went and whooped them and took the one seed right from them. Or how about Deshaun Watson, his rookie season, I think it was. Yeah. They, early in the year, right after he takes over the starting job, drives him down the field to win the football game against New England. All you gotta do is hold Brady for 60 seconds. Nope, Brandon Cook's corner of the end zone touchdown. Good night, good luck. Yep. Or the playoff games where the Texans have been embarrassed by the New England Patriots. They can't beat these guys, and they certainly can't beat this team with this defense this year. You're right, Jenna. I do not believe the Patriots have an elite offense. I do not believe the Patriots in 2019 even have an above average passing game. But they don't need it in this football game. The Texans' defense, by the way, 31st on third down, 32nd in the red zone. Two spots that just kill you against a team that is as buttoned up as New England. So, for all those reasons, I would be, and I'm more down on the Patriots than almost anybody.
And you're still taking the Patriots.
I would be shocked if the Texans are able to win this game.
I wouldn't be shocked, but I don't think we need to really worry about Tom Brady's elbow. I mean, time after time. When you think Tom Brady's down, he comes back and proves everybody wrong. I mean, he's been doing that for 20 years now.
Yep. Yeah.
But I put Deshaun Watson in the elite quarterback class. I believe that he's elite. But if you want to be one of the best, I think you have to prove it to yourself and prove it to your teammates and prove it to your organization. And you have, which I think, who is the best wide receiver in all of football in DeAndre Hopkins. If you want to be elite, you have to beat the best. And that's Tom Brady. So I think that they can go out and beat the New England Patriots. It's not going to be easy, but I think that they can get it done.
Let me follow up real quick. We saw Stephon Gilmore erase Amari Cooper a week ago. Just totally take him out of the game.
Right.
You had a lot of these matchups. Top receiver, top corner. I thought Troy Aikman during the broadcast last week said something really interesting. He's like, this reminds me of Michael versus Deion, where this was before we knew Amari was going to get a race. He said, I'm going to throw it to him. He's going to win some. Right. He's going to lose some. My guy's going to win some. He's going to win some. How can Deshaun have more success than Amari did? And, like, what does it remind you of guys you went up against that you knew you were going to have your work cut out for you all day long?
I just think that, from attacking the ball standpoint and going up attacking the ball at the highest point, I just believe that DeAndre Hopkins is a better football player. He's a better athlete. He beats man-to-man coverage at the line of scrimmage. He separates well in the top of the route. And, he has that mentality that, he's a dog wide receiver. You know, he's not just one of those guys that's going to catch the ball and just slide on the ground and go out of bounds. He has a dog mentality. And he's been showing that since day one, since he got into the NFL. He's a big-time competitor.
Yeah.
And he takes it personal when teams come up and press him at the line of scrimmage, which every wide receiver should. But to watch Amari Cooper go up against Stephon Gilmore last weekend and get shut out, for me, that would never happen. But I saw it happen, but I do think that DeAndre Hopkins is the best wide receiver in all of football.
Well, you look at DeAndre Hopkins and look at, just body type-wise, the difference between him and Cooper. He has a greater catch radius, and he's not one of these guys that depends on the yak after the yards. He's a guy that catches the ball down the field. He'll give you some yak, but he does have that dog in him. You've seen, when they've had these joint practices, him getting in fights and barking back and forth. And also, I think the difference is Deshaun Watson is willing to give his guy a chance. Dak's not a guy that's willing to give his guy a chance. He saw him covered. He didn't give him the 50-50 ball. DeAndre Hopkins has made his entire career of winning the 50-50 balls because he doesn't have elite separation. He doesn't have elite speed. So guys are going to try and challenge him at the line of scrimmage, which I think Gilmore can do, but it could also, bite you because, me playing with Plex, knowing that sometimes somebody think they can get in his chest and they try and bully and the bully gets bullied because if you miss or you get out physical at the point of attack, then those are big plays down the field.
One of the issues for the Texans in this specific game, I think, is the Patriots do such a great job of keeping everything in front of them, not allowing the big play. And I think Deshaun Watson will win a league MVP one day. I think he is a great football player. Right now, he has two bugaboos. One is turns the ball over a little too much, and the other is he seems to at times be more accurate on the deeper throws than the little shorter intermediate throws. Like the easier passes at times, he is not as precise with. That's all he's going to have against New England.
Right.
They're not going to let DeAndre Hopkins get over the top.
Here's the difference, right? Because listen, this is the Bang 8 King. You want to talk about Deion, right? This is the Bang 8 intermediate 15-yard Bang 8. I watched him make Deion pull both his hamstrings on the same play against us, against the Ravens, right? So when you think about DeAndre Hopkins, he's kind of that intermediate 15 to 20-yard guy. But they have Fuller and Stills that can run those safeties off, and you have to respect them. That's where you can either get the Bang 8 or the dagger.
Tell the audience what the Bang 8 is.
A Bang 8 is like a tight post.
A seven-step post.
Seven-step post, or you can go with the 10 to 12-yard dig after everybody clears out, which gives you an opportunity to put Gilmore on his back. And because he's so physical, because he's so big, he can put him on his back and still have that catch radius because he's a little taller than Gilmore. So, I mean, I think this is going to be a battle, and strategically, I think that it can cause some problems for that great, you know, defense because they have those two elite. They don't have one. They have two Deshaun Watsons, essentially, that's just going to run the top of the defense off.
If you take all the players out of it, talk about the coaching discrepancy.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, where would you even put a guy like Bill O'Brien up against a guy like Bill Belichick? Or do, as a player, does that not even factor into it when you get ready to take on another team?
Of course it factors in because, you know, I've played against the New England Patriots more than anybody in the NFL. One thing about Bill Belichick is that he's going to take he's going to take everything away that you do well. I've played him 6 or 7 times, and you're going to see something different every time that you play against him defensively. And I believe that he's going to show Deshaun Watson something different that he hasn't seen all season. And the Houston Texans are going to have to make adjustments on the fly.
Yep.
And when you go make those adjustments on the fly, it just may be too late.
Right.
If the New England Patriots get up 2 touchdowns, the Houston Texans will be in trouble.
That's what we always say. When Bill Belichick comes in, he takes away your weakness, and that's how they end up winning games. Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern.